Since my first encounter with this dark being, I had studied one of Jalal ad-Din's valuable manuscripts, and was therefore better able to deal with the obsessing spirit, whom I quickly banished in a very summary fashion, without throwing the patient into a state of unconsciousness. I was now invited by the prince to enter his service, and attach myself permanently to his suite, either as a physician or in any other capacity I might prefer. "Surely," said the young prince, "you have not spent all your days as a student of deep mysteries. Methinks you hast more the bearing and appearance of a soldier than a follower of that art of healing, which seemeth most appropriate to grey hair and slow blood. Your eyes, my friend, did glisten I noticed as you beheldest the warriors who paraded before us the other day, and I observed that you did sit upon your steed as one who had learnt to maintain his seat in the saddle under all difficulties." The blood mounted to my cheek, and the recollections of the wild, free life of the mountains awoke in my mind as I listened to this speech, and I bowed low to the prince, as I answered proudly, "I have been many things in even my short life, most gracious sire, and methinks I could yet handle a sword and spear in a manner, which would not disgrace even a soldier of your highness. Wouldst you then care to follow my fortunes, not only as my trusted physician, but as one of my fighting men? If so you hast but to express your desire and I shall grant it to you, for of a truth do I feel that I owe my life and my reason unto your skill, and I would fain reward you as a prince should." For one moment I was so delighted at the prospect of an active life and the chance of winning distinction on the field of battle, that I was about to accept the prince's offer. But I thought of my wife, and of how I was to leave her, how I would have to part from her entirely for a time, and my love and my jealous fears proved stronger even than my ambition. With low bow, expressive at once of my sense of the honor which the prince wished to bestow upon me, and of my deep obligation to him, I answered, "Sire, it is with the utmost reluctance that I hesitate to avail myself of the honor proposed to me. There is no career I would desire more than that of arms. But I have ties, which bind me more strongly than ambition, and, if your most gracious highness will pardon the seeming indifference to the favor offered to me, I would choose rather to continue in my present career, since to follow your highness through the present campaign I must leave this city of Herat." The prince frowned, and seemed greatly annoyed by my answer. Princes are not wont to find their favors so coolly received, and he answered coldly, "It is enough, sir physician. You art dismissed from our presence." "Oh, Ahimsiman," said my friend the vizier, in a low voice, as we left the presence chamber, "verily you was born under an unlucky star, since you hast not the wit to avail thyself of the favor of princes when it is showered upon you. Who, or what, is this wonderful attraction that keeps you in Herat, when fortune points the way to Persia?" "It is my wife," said I, unguardedly. "I could not take her with me on the long, forced marches of the Persian army, as they go to quell the revolts in this distant province, and I like not to leave her behind me." "Your wife," said he, laughing, "if that is all it is not impossible that you may follow the prince of Persia yet. Surely you couldst arrange for her safety and seclusion in some way?" "I know not," replied I stiffly, "but I have already given my answer to the prince, and been dismissed by him. The matter is therefore at an end." The vizier laughed again, and his eyes twinkled slyly as he said, "Go to, Ahimsiman, tell your wife of the offer you hast refused, and see if she will commend your devotion to her." As we had now reached the outer door, I parted from the vizier without further remarks, and as I hurried home I resolved to tell Zuleika and see if she were truly pleased to think I was not going to leave her. The vizier's words had awakened an uneasy suspicion, which half slumbered in my mind, and I was by no means too certain that Zuleika would give me the thanks for refusing the prince's offer, which I felt I merited. And the vizier was right. She heard me with a mixture of surprise and pleasure till I told her how I had refused the proposed favor and elected to remain in Herat, and then she expressed her disappointment in no measured terms, reproaching me with having no ambition, no desire to rise in life and take a position which would raise her as well as myself. "A learned man is all very well in his way, no doubt," added she, "but the practice of healing will never raise you to the position in the state, which you, as a warrior distinguished by the favor of a prince, might attain. You hast told me oft that in your early days, the practice of arms was familiar to you. Why then dost you not avail thyself of so good a chance of adopting war as your profession, especially as by so doing you couldst still practice your healing art upon the person of the prince, and such of your comrades as had the ill luck to be wounded? I was so much offended at this address that I scorned to explain to her my real reason, for I thought she showed but little anxiety about my personal safety, and was somewhat too eager to send me away from her. I was leaving the room in hot anger when she called me back, saying, "Return here, Ahimsemen, you art so impetuous and so quick of temper, I see that you art offended at my frank speech, and dost think I am careless of your life. But it is not so. For I deem that you bearest a charmed life, and I do not fear that even in battle harm will come to you. Moreover," she added, touching my cheeks and beard caressingly with her fingertips, for I had returned to her side, "I am so proud of you, and so sure you dost only want opportunity in order to become as great as you dost deserve to be, I would fain have you to accept a chance like this, which fortune had surely sent in your way in order to help you to that position in life to which I am most certain you dost by right of birth belong." She had touched now upon a subject about which I was somewhat sore, for I felt most keenly the mystery which surrounded my birth and parentage, and I would have given much to know to whom I of right belonged. My pride and my ambition caused me always to cling to the belief that I might be the son of the man who had given me the chain and spoken those strange words of affection to me. I was sure he was a person of distinction, but I knew not where to search for him. Nor was I sure that he would welcome me, for he had never come to see me but that one time. I had told Zuleika a great part of my history, only suppressing such portions as I thought it safest to abstain from confiding to anyone. She was very discreet, and capable beyond most of her sex of keeping her own counsel and another's secrets, and she had soon drawn from me all but what concerned my flight from the temple and Jalal ad-Din's death. That I had practiced the arts of magic she knew, though not that my instructor in them was dead, and she had heard of my life in the mountains when a boy, and of my having joined the marauders of the hills for a time. Ambitious herself, she had fed the flame of my ambition, and encouraged me in the belief that some day I should attain a position worthy of what she held to be my distinguished parentage. And in alluding thus to my birth and my ambitions, she knew that she was advancing the strongest possible argument in favor of accepting the Prince of Persia's offer. "You dost not need to urge me to consider again the chance I have missed, Zuleika, for I should have at once accepted it but for the thought of leaving you. Now it is too late. I have declined it, and I shall not again sue for its renewal. I care not to solicit the favor of any man, be he prince or king. Nay, but he may offer it to you again, and if so you wilt accept it, and when you dost return a victorious conqueror, I shall reward you in any way you dost desire most, and I will show you how proud Zuleika is of her beloved." She looked up at me with so much witchery in her dark eyes, and touched me so lovingly, that my gloomy suspicions were dispelled, and I embraced her in my joy and kissed her passionately. Thus was my career changed, for, as Zuleika thought, the prince was too anxious to have me with him to give up the idea lightly, and overtures were made to me through the vizier, which I now accepted with a mixed feeling of pleasure and reluctance, of satisfaction and foreboding of some coming evil. My forebodings were not, however, fulfilled very quickly. Zuleika went to reside under her uncle's care during my absence, and when the time of our parting arrived showed the amount of emotion which was becoming on such an occasion. She perhaps a little overacted the part, but she did it very gracefully, by no means disfiguring her charming countenance with an excess of tears, yet making up by appropriate expressions of her feelings in words for any lack there might be of them, and I left reassured as to her fidelity to me. I did not, however, suspect that my wife had already been seen by the Prince of Persia, and that it was only his sense of the gratitude he owed me, which prevented him from trying to possess himself of her. The vizier, having repeated to the prince my remarks about my attachment to my wife, he had conceived a desire to see the lady, and to judge for himself of the power of her charms. By bribing some of my servants, the vizier had contrived that the prince should conceal himself in my garden, and behold Zuleika when she was walking there alone and unveiled. Zuleika was supposed to be ignorant of this little plan, but in truth she had been cautiously informed by one of her women, and it was by her connivance that it was carried out. The idea that the prince wished to see her secretly having fired her imagination and flattered her vanity. The expedition to which I was attached was one sent to quell a revolt in one of the minor dependent provinces, and the prince had been given the command by his father as much to remove him from the court as to afford him a chance of distinction. I soon learnt from those about the prince that he and his father were not always upon the best of terms, since the prince sided with his mother, between whom and the king there had been a marked coldness, almost amounting at times to open enmity, for many years. The Emir of Afghanistan, being a huntsman of Queen Artemisia, had allowed the queen and her son to retire more than once to his court, leaving the king of Persia for considerable periods, and Queen Artemisia was more than suspected of engaging in constant, though hitherto unsuccessful, plots to dethrone her husband and place her son upon the throne. Prince Selim himself was, as I had seen at first, somewhat weak of will and easily dominated by those around him, and the strong will of his mother kept him in constant subjection to her wishes, the more so as there was a strong, even passionate, attachment between them, while towards the king the son felt an indifference and almost dislike, born no doubt of the divided feeling between his parents. To me the young prince soon showed a strong disposition to attach himself, partly due to the influence I had to gain over him in order to protect him, and partly to a feeling that I was to be thoroughly relied upon as his faithful follower, as in very truth at that time I was. We experienced some sharp fighting and had by no means an easy task in suppressing the revolt, and once engaged in the realities of warfare, I found little time to think of domestic matters. The stir and bustle of a camp were very congenial to me, and there was pleasure in serving with highly trained regular troops far superior to fighting in a promiscuous melee with an insubordinate mountain tribe where each man thought himself as good as his leader, and where little or no discipline prevailed. All my instincts of a warlike nature revived. I learned the various arts of strategy from the experienced general who served nominally under the prince, but who was in truth our real leader, and as I was high in favor with Prince Selim, I was rapidly advanced from one post of honor to another, those who envied my success deeming it well to feign a friendship for me if they did not always feel it. My knowledge and skill as a physician made me of still more importance, not alone to the prince, but to my comrades, and for a considerable time I appeared to justify Zuleika's belief that I bore a charmed life, for I escaped any serious wound. At last, however, I had the misfortune to receive a dangerous thrust from a spear, and as I lay on the ground some of my comrades' horses were driven in the tide of battle over me where I lay, and I was still further injured by their hoofs, so that the fight, being at last gained by our side and the enemy beaten back, I was picked up scarcely alive and carried to my tent, where I lay for many weeks in extreme danger. At last I began to rally, and the siege of the city we had attacked being by this time over, I was granted leave to return to my own home in the city of Herat to rest and recover my strength. My reception by Zuleika was all that I could desire, and more than repaid me for the separation and suffering, while I could not but wonder how I had so long been content to lead a quiet studious life in that dull hill city. Chapter 18. My prisoner. On my return to the army, I found that all was in a state of bustle and confusion in consequence of the news that had just been received of the sudden and unexpected death of the king of Persia, and the consequent necessity for the immediate return of his son. The prince, or, as I must now call him, the king, was about to set out upon his return to the city and palace where his father had died, and I, as a matter of course, was expected to accompany him. We had reached to within 2 days' journey of the city, and were resting for the night, when a messenger arrived with a letter from Queen Artemisia to her son, after reading which he summoned me to his presence, and addressing me said, "Ahimsiman, you art I believe faithful to me. Among all around me you art the one I would most readily trust as being truly faithful to my interests, and therefore I desire to send you to receive the charge of a prisoner who had been found conspiring already against me, and whom my mother had thought fit to arrest and send to the fortress of. But as he is a man who held great power under my father, and was very popular among the soldiers, it were unwise to confide the charge of him to any who have been his friends in the past, and I desire, therefore, to send you with a troop of horsemen to conduct him to the fortress, where you shall hand the charge of him over to the governor, who had already received instructions how to deal with his prisoner. You will start at once, and the messenger who brought this letter will conduct you to where the prisoner now awaits your coming. You will then join me at Pasaikka. I bowed low to the king, and having kissed the hand, which he extended to me in token of my fidelity, I went forth to make my preparations. A sharp ride of a few hours brought us to where a company of soldiers were encamped with their prisoner awaiting us, and I took over the command, sending the officer and his soldiers back to the city by order of the king. It was already dark when I did so, and as the prisoner was much muffled up by a large cloak, I did not take much notice of his appearance at the time. Scarcely had the other soldiers departed, when a message was brought to me to ask if I would grant my prisoner the favor of a few minutes' interview. Accordingly, I repaired to the tent in which he was confined, and lifting the curtain aside from the doorway, entered. As the prisoner, a powerful man who was heavily ironed, stood up and advanced to meet me, I saw his face for the first time, and uttered an exclamation of surprise, for I recognized him at once as the man who had taken me to the herdsman's hut when I was an infant. The man above all others best able to solve for me the mystery of my birth. "You are surprised," said he coolly, "so was I when I saw you but now. I sent for you because there is a matter of much moment, which I have to confide to your ears, and also because I think when you hast heard my narrative, you wilt feel that at least it should not be your hand, which conducts me to a captivity that I know but too well will end only with my death. Queen Artemisia and I are too old and too deadly enemies for her to spare me now, when fate has delivered me into her hands. I saw you when you arrived, and though you are changed somewhat since you left a boy, you bear us too close a resemblance, both in feature and in gesture, to your father for anyone to doubt you art in truth his son. You dost speak of my father, I pray you tell me who he was, for long have I desired to learn from whom I spring. Did you then never guess whose son you art? No, save that I believe it was the man who came with you to see me when I was a boy. He who gave me this chain, said I, drawing it forth to show him, must have been my father. But if so, why did he show so little care for me? Why did he come but that one time to see his son? Dost you not even yet guess who that man was, nor why he of all men dared not acknowledge his favorite child? Then must I tell you, Ahensimen, that your father was this king of Persia who had died so recently, and if you will grant me the time, I will tell you his story and your own, and you shall judge if the lot of princes is ever one to be envied. He then told me the history of my parents, and of the murder of my poor mother, much as it is related in the prologue to this story of my life, and went on to say, it was impossible to find any proofs of Queen Artemisia's share in your mother's death, but the king had very little doubt in his own mind as to the hand which had dealt him this terrible blow, and when the queen met him as he went to his own apartments from his beloved Cynthia's deathbed, he shrank from the caressing touch with which she sought to welcome his return, and dissemble her own feelings, as though some loathsome thing had touched him, for to his sight her hands seemed dyed red in the blood of his murdered Cynthia. His expression and his gesture were enough for the queen. She drew back haughtily and turned away, and from that hour there was naught but a thinly veiled enmity between them. She could no longer hope to regain his love, and the dignity of her position forbade her quarrelling openly with her husband, but she could and did embitter his life with the secret intrigues against him, which she encouraged, and she was able to estrange the affections of his legitimate son, and make her child side with her on all occasions. As for Cynthia's child, the whole thoughts of the king were directed to finding some safe asylum where Queen Artemisia should never discover him, and it was therefore given out to all that the child was dead, while in truth I myself took him, as you dost know, to that worthy herdsman whose wife had nursed me a few years before. The king himself could not for a long time bear the thought of seeing you, It revived so keenly that terrible grief for your mother's loss, from which he ever strove to win oblivion. Not till I told him of your visions, and how you had surely seen her spirit, did he desire to behold her child. When he left you, it was with the full intention of arranging some plan whereby he could bring you to live with him, without exposing you to such a fate as had befallen your mother. But he was suddenly called away to Egypt by an insurrection there, and we deemed it best for you to send you to the temple, since that would at least afford you a safe asylum. It had been your father's thought to train you to the profession of arms and to keep you near himself. But when difficulties of all kinds began to gather thickly around him, he took another thought, and decided to let you follow your desire of becoming a prophet of the temple. He had a hope that thereby he might still be able to see much of you, while the sacredness of your office would give you the strongest possible protection against any plots of the queen, even should she learn of your existence. Moreover, your father thought that the death of his beloved Cynthia was a judgment upon him for having taken unto himself one who had been dedicated to sacred things, and he thought to appease the offended deity by giving to the service of the temple her only son. Your own desire seemed to point yet more strongly to this being the right course to follow. We were absent from Persia for some years, and when at last we returned, the king's first care was to send me to the temple of Amurat, to which he had caused you to be sent, that I might inquire as to your welfare. There I learned that you had struck down one of the high priests and fled. Search had been made for you, and you had been traced to a shepherd's tent, where you had given two links of a gold chain, which I well knew to have been given you by the king, for food and clothes. You was followed in your flight to a precipice, over which it was believed that you had fallen, since those who pursued you beheld your white robes, and, as it seemed, thyself, lying upon the rocks. It was impossible to recover your body, so the attempts to do so had to be abandoned, and the priests, believing that the vengeance of the gods had overtaken you, forbore to make further search. The king and I mourned you as one dead, until a few weeks before your father's death, when a strange rumor reached us concerning one named Ahensimen, who was in attendance upon the prince of Persia, and who had shown great medical skill, being also thought to execute many of his cures by the aid of certain gifts of divination, which he possessed. We had heard of the wonderful cure wrought upon Prince Salem by you, but your name was not mentioned till one came from the camp who knew you well, and his description of you, and of the name you was known under, caused to your father the greatest agitation. He decided to recall his son immediately, in order that you might accompany him. Then he heard that you had left the camp and returned to your home for a season, and it had been arranged that I should seek you out, when the king was seized by his sudden and fatal illness, an illness of whose cause, methinks, I could find another explanation than that which the learned men around the patient gave. Al-Zulid paused, overcome by his emotion, and then continued, shortly before his death, your father, who called repeatedly upon the name of his lost son, sent for me and for a scribe, and in my presence and that of the vizier dictated a decree by which he left the kingdom unto you, his son Ahensimen, should it be proved that you were still living. For he believed that were it to pass to the prince of Persia, it would be equivalent to leaving it to the queen, since her son is entirely under her influence and governance, and Al-Jazid did not consider it would be well for Persia that Queen Artemisia should in effect reign over it through her son. In the event of my finding that you was really dead, the kingdom was left unto a third son, who, like thyself, was his illegitimate offspring. To the son of Artemisia, your father left wealth sufficient for all his needs, even on the most princely scale. He left him one of his principal palaces and much treasure, but the government of his kingdom he desired should pass into other hands than those of Artemisia and her son. For sight of you, Ahensimen, he ever mourned. And when he heard of the great military powers you had displayed, and of your popularity with the army, he felt that was you indeed his son. You was only justifying the opinion he had formed of your character from that one interview he had with you, and that you wouldst make a successor to himself under whom Persia would increase in her greatness. As for himself, Ahensimen, he ever labored as one from whose life the zest had fled, and whose heart was ever a prey to an abiding sorrow, which sapped at its roots the seed of ambition, and rendered as Dead Sea fruit all the triumphs, all the conquests, that he attained. Thus the promise with which his reign began was never fulfilled, and he acquired a character of weakness, which was due gathered to listless indifference to the struggles for power of those around him. As I looked at Ben al-Zulayd, I felt that he spoke the truth, and it did not require much knowledge of mankind to convince me that the nature of the man before me was essentially an honest one. Had even gratitude to him for his care of my boyhood not influenced me, I should still have felt a reluctance to sharing in consigning him to captivity, and I was greatly agitated, not alone at what he had told me of my parents, but at the strange chance which had placed him in my power. My duty to the king who had trusted me was clear, but did I not owe some duty to this man also? Could I hand him over to the certainty of captivity and death? While I considered, al-Zulayd spoke again. "Dost you desire," said he, "to know where is this decree of which I speak? Behold, it is in the hands of the Grand Vizier Babajul. He was more fortunate than I, and had warning in time to flee from danger, taking with him not alone the decree, which had been entrusted to his care, but also the scribe who wrote it. Therefore Queen Artemisia may suspect that it contains matter adverse to her interests and those of her son, but she can have no certain knowledge of its contents, and in arresting me she had but acted upon a vague suspicion, without proof to support it. Yet do I know well that the man to whose keeping she had consigned me will not trouble himself to look for proofs of my guilt or innocence when the queen commands my death. He is but a creature of her own, only too ready to do her bidding. But as for you, Ahensimen, if you dost desire a kingdom, you must seek out Babajul quickly, or else he will seek for this third son of your father, and set him up against Artemisia. There'll be many who will join his standard, or your, for there are many who like not the rule of Artemisia and her weak-willed son. The haughty queen had made many enemies. Nay, answered I, but I dare not be the one to wrest the kingdom from the grasp of Selim and his mother, since honor and friendship alike forbid it. To the prince I owe many a favor. He had shown me kindness and distinguished me with marks of honor at a time when I was obscure, and when we knew not there was any blood relationship between us. How, then, can I avail myself of this decree, and turn like a traitor to rend the hand which has showered favors upon me? How can I thrust from his throne him to whom I have sworn fidelity? The prospect tempts me much. There is no height to which I would hesitate to climb, no position too exalted for the ambition of my own desires, but I cannot climb onto a throne by trampling down the rights of my patron. Be it so, since you dost regard it in that way, but at least satisfy thyself of the truth of what I have told you, by seeking out Babajul and beholding this decree, which makes of you a king. And remember, if you dost not use its powers against Prince Selim, another will, one who had not your scruples. Beware, moreover, of ever trusting Artemisia or her son. They may load you with favors today, yet tomorrow, if it served their own interests better, they would consign you to a dungeon cell. The wolf is not more savage than Artemisia, the hyena not more treacherous, nor the fox more cunning than this queen, who, did she but once know whose son you art, would rend you in pieces in her bitter long-nourished hate, no matter what sacrifice you had made for the sake of her son. Trust her not, and trust not her son, for, verily, as the sun shines in heaven, so doth the hatred of Artemisia towards your mother and your father burn like an ever-scorching fire, whose flames will consume you some day. The earnestness with which al-Zulayd spoke impressed me in spite of myself, for it seemed as though his words were as the words of one inspired, and I resolved to take heed of this queen, and to keep from her all knowledge of my parentage. I thought that I could play with a two-edged sword and yet not cut myself, but who can foresee the tricks which fate may play him, or who can guard against the decrees of destiny? When the first selfish thought of myself and my concerns had passed, I remembered Ben al-Zulayd and his present position, and I said to him, "But what of you, my friend? Cannot I help your fortunes in any way? I owe you also too much to lead you to your death, yet how can I be the one to release you? What can I do? Wouldst it avail, think you, for me to intercede with the king for your release?" Al-Zulayd laughed a scornful laugh as he replied, As well might you ask a cat to spare the bird within its clutches as ask Artemisia to forego her revenge upon me for my share in the past. No, I would not have you sue for my life to the son of Artemisia. Rather would I die a thousand deaths, said he passionately, but if you wouldst befriend me, give me a sharp, long knife, that I may conceal it about my person, and mount me tomorrow on the fleetest horse you hast, and I will do the rest for myself. None will know that you hast helped me.